Welcome back to The Long Spoon. I'm Silas Grant, the host of this concept. The Long Spoon is a concept that I put together to create a space for readers. And as I always say, for those that listen to the previous installments, readers are better leaders. Readers become better leaders. And reading on a daily basis gives you a space in your day to focus on an idea that someone took a lot of time to create. We live in a society where you can grab your phone and speak into your phone. You can type into your phone what you're thinking in real time. And sometimes those sort of microwave thoughts are not the best to consume. And so we spend all of our days scrolling and consuming microwaved content from people who are shooting from the hip. And what reading does is it slows down our process and it forces us to take some time to give thought to a concept that someone else wrote. Sometimes writing a book takes weeks, months, years. The editing process, the reevaluation process. And so for me, reading has helped me expand my mind because the consumption of reading is, again, me sitting with someone else's idea, someone else's concept that they took a long time to create, which means that it's been refined. It's been created in a way where once they submit it to the world, you can trust that it's gone through several iterations and that the idea that they're trying to project to the world or display to the world has been tested. Even if you disagree with it, even if it's not your cup of tea, reading gives you the opportunity to be exposed to and consume and digest well thought out ideas. And so I am a daily reader. I have now committed to reading a book per week. And we are now in the 15th week of 2025, which is crazy. And last week, week 14, I read a book which is called How to Make a Few Billion Dollars by Brad Jacobs. So I was in an airport the week before last, and I had not ordered a book for last week. So the airport has good book options from time to time. I saw this book, glanced through it a bit, decided to pick it up. I did not know who Brad Jacobs was prior to this. But Brad Jacobs has spent almost 45 years as a serial entrepreneur and a CEO. I looked up his net worth, and apparently it's in the upwards of $10 to $12 billion. And so I'm assuming that if somebody writes a book, How to Make a Few Billion, they've actually made it. Brad also is responsible for approximately 500 acquisitions, and he's raised close to $30 billion in outside capital. So he qualifies himself as a person who knows about making billions of dollars. His intention with the book is to share what he's learned, the blunders, but also how to give readers the ability to replicate the successes that he's had. And so when I opened the book, I didn't quite know what to expect, but I will say when I read it, it was not in the realm of what I could have potentially expected. The book is really about basic human fundamental processes and how we think and how we act and the relationships that we build. And he really shaves back a lot of the layers and gets to the core of who he is and the core of what he did to be successful. He doesn't talk a lot about specific dollar amounts in the book, but he talks a lot about leadership, assuming responsibility, leading people, leading initiatives, how you should think. So if you're this sort of like gung-ho, I'm ready to make $1 billion tomorrow, show me all the secret formulas, show me the investments you made, this may not be the exact book for you. But if you are a person that's looking at the fundamental elements of how you should think in order to seize opportunities or maximize what's in front of you, then it's more of a book for you. So he starts the book talking about rearranging your brain. And at the beginning, he talks about thought experiments. And he also ends the book with a couple of sections that are appendixes that talk about thought experiments as well. But the idea is to stimulate your imagination to create this expansive experience. $1 billion is not something that most people will touch. So if you're seeking to be a billionaire, you got to first expand your mind to not see that as an insurmountable achievement. So he talks a lot about the experiments that he did on himself and that he suggests for other people. And so before you can achieve $1 billion status, you've got to expand your mind. He talks about the love that he has for making money and the idea of earning money easier. And a part of that comes from what he describes as a love vibe. So when you're talking to a billionaire that's giving you insight on how to make money, and he says, well, you got to think about how you love, that ain't necessarily what you typically assume as being advice that will be given to you by someone who is a billionaire. But again, he strips back a lot of the layers and goes to a very fundamental way in which we think versus how we should think. He asked a couple of questions that will prompt thought in the chapter. He asks, what's the worst thing that could happen and how would I cope with that? How would I cope with the worst thing that would happen? Again, this is about expanding your mind. So he's expanding your mind in a positive way, but also in a negative way. So it's sort of like this elasticity that you've got to create in your mind in order to be able to have the capacity to inherit what comes along with being a billionaire. He also asks a question of, if a friend had a similar story or a similar worry, how would I advise them to handle it? That reminds me of a viral meme that I saw last week that said, if I were the star character in a movie and people were watching my movie, what would they be yelling at the screen for me to do? Is it move to the left? Is it watch out for the guy with the gun? Is it the car's going to go over the cliff? Again, if a friend had a similar worry, how would I advise them to handle it? He makes a statement in the chapter that says making money in the business world means you have to get used to problems. So many times in our mindset that we have currently, we're trying to avoid problems. But he's getting us prepared for a billionaire mindset, and you've got to actually face the problems head on. And he says that facing those problems, getting used to those problems, is actually what the business is. And this was a conversation that he had with someone else that led him to this conclusion. And so the reframing of how we look at uncomfortable things is important. And he suggests that we reframe them to be able to utilize them versus being preoccupied with them. And he wants us to move from rigid thinking to dialectical thinking, which is basically considering other perspectives. A quote that he ends the chapter with is from Richard Feynman, which says, we are trying to prove ourselves wrong as quickly as possible, because only in that way can we find progress. And so we're not just expanding our minds, but accelerating the way in which we think. So chapter one was really a fundamental chapter in terms of where this book would go. As he moves on, he begins to talk about the trends that you should be looking for in business. And so now that you've reshaped your mind, you're looking at the way in which the world around you works, and you've got to find the right trends and react to them in the right way. And he said that learning any industry is really about identifying the trend spotting, right? You've got to be able to spot the trend. Spot trending, or trend spotting, I should say, is very important based on the information that he's sharing in this book. He talks a lot about scalability in industries and how if an industry is not providing you with an opportunity to scale, then you're not going to reach the billionaire status. He also says that in almost every industry, you're required to have a heavy investment in tech, a heavy understanding in it, but also a heavy investment in it. So he talks a bit about artificial intelligence and how essentially humans are merging with artificial intelligence and how we need to be prepared for that merger. And he makes a big statement that in the next century, Homo sapiens have a 50-50 chance of going extinct. And if they don't go extinct, they'll merge with the tech that's being created. And for context, he states that 99% of the species that lived on this earth at one point are no longer existing. And so we think we're invincible, but he states early in chapter one that you've got to get over this concept of invincibility and move into a more realistic perspective that you're not invincible. You can go extinct. And if you don't adjust, you will. And this idea of us merging with tech is going to be one concept that we're going to have to really embrace. With respect to scaling, he also talks in chapter three about mergers and acquisitions and how, you know, as you begin to think about mergers, the idea of cultural integration is important. The idea of customers being integrated into your concept is important. When you buy a company, you also buy the relationship they have with their customers, and you've got to make those customers feel even better than they did before you came into the equation. He talks a bit about consultants and how to price out the value of consultants. And then he moves into chapter four, which is about building outrageously talented teams. And he said something that really stood out to me. I think the biggest point that I took away in this book. He says that hiring is for the purpose of accomplishing big things and having fun doing it. That was probably the biggest statement that resonated with me. When we're building businesses, we think that hiring is a necessity, which it is, but it's a necessity once we get to the point that we've committed that we're going to accomplish something big and that we enjoy doing it. We have fun while we're doing it. He also makes a big statement that we should identify the qualities we admire in people, and also identify the weaknesses that are seen by our subordinates in us. And, you know, I think this is important, and it's very important because the things that you admire about people, the things that you see in people that you love, it's going to be a reflection of your comfort in the team that you have around you. But also, as you expand your mind, sometimes the discomfort is okay, and you'll hire people that may not be the kind of people that you're used to. But even if you don't have the same sort of qualities, if you have an admiration for them, it's more likely that you can get closer to building that, as he describes, outrageously talented team. But again, the biggest thing for me in this book that I took away was that when you're hiring people, and this might sound straightforward for somebody else, but it really helped me think through some things personally, that you're not just hiring to hire. You're hiring because you're at a point where you want to accomplish something so big that you can't do it alone. and you want to have fun doing it, and you want to have people around you that keep it fun, and you want to have people around you that you admire. He talked about four qualities that you should always seek out in hires: people that are intelligent, people that are hungry, people that have integrity, and people who display collegiality. And so he breaks down what it means to have all of those elements in place and what it means when those elements are missing. He talks about hiring A-level people versus B and C-level people. And so he breaks down what those levels look like and how if you are an A-level person, you're going to hire A-level person. But the moment you start hiring B-level people, they start hiring C-level people. So there's like a runoff and a watered-down version at each level when you start building your structure. He also goes into how to run meetings, and he calls them electric meetings, basically meetings that have power, meetings that have electricity. He goes into very specific detail about what he calls monthly and quarterly operating reviews, MORs and QORs. And he focuses a lot on having the right people in the room and making sure that each and every person actually participates, that there should never be a situation where people are in the room that don't need to be in the room and that people are not in the room, not participating. So he talks about the idea of unanimous opinions and scripted meetings are not beneficial. Scripted meetings should actually be an email. If you can just read a script and it can be read by them on their own time. But when people come to meetings, it should also be a point where the meetings are for discussing counters and alternatives to the thought of the person leading the meeting. If everybody's agreeing with that person, then that meeting is not productive. He also talks about later on in the book, killing competition versus killing each other. Once you've built that big team, that good team, that electric team, that outstanding, outrageously talented team, he talks a bit about in this chapter ant colonies in particular and how ants work together, and he gives some real specific examples of that. So the book is not super long. It's six chapters, and I mentioned earlier there's some there's a section with appendix A through D, and as he closes the book, he again goes back to thought experiments for the expansion of the mind. He also talks about technology again and the history of technology and how in the last 100 to 200 years, we've seen like this really accelerated period of technological advancements, and how seeing that should really force us to understand that there's a reality that soon we will be merging with tech in a way that we hadn't before. He also talks in Appendix C about interview questions for job candidates and how important it is to ask the right questions. So there were a couple of questions that stood out to me that I want to read to you all really quickly. The first one is, when you look at your professional self in the mirror, what do you see? And this is a question that he's saying that you should pose to someone that you're potentially going to hire. And sometimes when we ask questions of people that we're considering for hiring, we merge in personal, which sometimes people are more comfortable with. But when you ask them specifically in their professional life, when they look at their professional self, what do they see? I think it offers a different perspective. He also asks the question, what's your favorite professional activity? People often talk about hobbies and activities outside of work, but what's your favorite professional activity? Another question, what have been your biggest frustrations or failures in your career? Frustrations, failures, they can kind of overlap, but then there's some differentiating factors there too. So I thought that was a good question. The next one is describe your character. We can talk about having character, but specifically describing it, I think, is a way in which you can expand your mind to think about character in a different way. Another question is, what defect should a professional never allow themselves to have? I thought that was a good question as well. It really speaks to what your preferences are, your preconceived notions about what a professional is. The next one is, name your three biases or three of your biases. And the last one is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well do you think your skill set matches what's required to succeed in this job? What would it take to make your answer to the previous question a 10? I thought that was a really great question. Because you get a real chance to see the person assess themselves based on what the job description is. But then if they aren't where they need to be, then they can state to you what the difference is, and then you guys can figure out together if that's your responsibility or their responsibility. He ends it with an appendix on a guideline for exercises within electric meetings. And again, keeping everybody's attention, boosting morale through recognition. That's how he ends the book, with those appendixes. And again, this book is not for someone who's looking for stock tips or, you know, hardcore business tips. It's really about the mindset that you have to have before any of that happens. And that caused me to think about the physical landscape that business people are in, the membership organizations that they belong to, the colleges they attend, the people that they surround themselves with, the conversations they have, the coaching they get from their career coaches, the mentoring they get from mentors, the advisement they get from advisors. This book is more in that vein of how you should be thinking about how you approach things. So the book is called How to Make a Few Billion Dollars by Brad Jacobs, book 14 of 2025 for me. I have a Patreon site that I want you all to visit, patreon.com/SILASGRANT. Silas Grant is my name. That is the Patreon page, patreon.com/SilasGrant. That's where I have the written notes to the book. Take a look at that. What I typically do is once a month at the beginning of the month, the first entry, the first book review for the month, is free to the public, and the remaining books are for members only. It's a very small investment to make to be a member of the Patreon page. But again, readers become better leaders. So thank you guys for being with me for the last 14 weeks. Book 14, How to Make a Few Billion Dollars by Brad Jacobs. Hope you guys can take a look at it yourselves. Look at my notes, listen to this review, and hopefully that incentivizes you to do some more reading.